Welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I may be your host, but today my guest really leads the conversation. His expertise is Medicare. Being a Canadian, I had next to no knowledge of the intricacies of this American program. If you're not an American either, I do, as always, encourage you to listen in, as the conversation may well prompt some curiosity, some questions, and investigation about similar possibilities where you live. Al not only explains Medicare, he discusses how it fits into the broader picture of financial security and retirement. Al also comments on the Medicare differences between states, and many of you consider moving post-retirement, so pay special attention to that part. Al's also an AI expert on LinkedIn, so I can't resist asking a few questions about AI. Please remember there is a resource page at boomwithabang.com now. You can look up previous episodes by subject. You can find books written by guests, including today's, lists of jobs and philanthropic possibilities. And also, if you're at all curious about the life of a house and pet sitter, I'm journaling my journey. Listen now to my conversation with Al Kushner. American Medicare and Medicaid have been in the news a lot lately, so it was timely when today's guest messaged me about coming on podcast to discuss Medicare as it relates to our demographic. As always, when we have a topic that is specific to one country or another, I encourage you to listen in no matter where you live, as the conversation may well prompt some curiosity, some questions, and investigation about similar possibilities where you live. Al is also an expert in various aspects of AI, so I'm hoping I can slip a few questions in about that too. Al Kushner, welcome to the podcast for Boomer Women, where we are embracing the journey.
Thank you, Agnes. I appreciate the opportunity.
No, this is going to be interesting. Before we get started, could you just explain the difference between Medicare and Medicaid in the US?
Well, Medicare is a program, or actually, we'll start with Medicaid, is a program designed for people who are of a below a certain income that are not eligible or can't afford health insurance. And every state has their own different regulations as far as their standards. Because every state operates independently for when it comes to Medicaid in terms of being eligible for it. For example, in New York has more robust Medicaid options, but in Florida they're more stricter in terms of the size of the household or the individual themselves as far as being able to work. Where Medicare is a program designed for people who are turning a certain age, usually 65 and over in the U.S., that can be getting affordable health care. Through the government program. It is also available for people under 65 who have certain disabilities, as well as any kind of chronic conditions that may facilitate the program to enact. So there are differences, yes, so but similarities in the name, but sometimes people get both Medicare and Medicaid. They may qualify for both. So every situation is different. So yeah, we can
Okay.
go into detail.
Well, let's hope I ask the right questions today. Now, I take it Medicare, you called it a program, but there's different plans, is that right?
Well, Medicare is a plan that has both hospitalization and doctors are part of the plan itself. And a lot of people can have it on its own, but there are certain out-of-pocket expenses, particularly when it comes to medical treatment by a physician. Medicare would cover 80% of the cost of a physician's treatment. However, the individual is also responsible for 20%. So if the bill is 10,000, they're responsible for 2,000. If it's a million, they're responsible for 200,000. So there are plans that actually are available called Medicare supplements that help to fill in the gap where Medicare leaves off. So yeah, it covers both hospital and doctor.
Okay. When you contacted me, you mentioned understanding Medicare enrollment. Now, our demographic is mostly boomer. You said something about deadlines. There's deadlines for enrollment?
Yeah, well, when you are turning 65, let's say if it's this year, you have 3 months before your birthday to sign up for Medicare, a month during the period of your birthday, and then 3 months afterwards. So a total of about 7 months is the time period that you could enroll in a Medicare program. So for those who are deciding or retiring, it's a great option. There are people who are, let's say, working in companies of 20 or more, and they may have their own health insurance. They can select to delay Medicare until they officially retire. For those who are working in 20 lives or under, they must take Medicare at that time they're eligible for.
So if someone's going to delay because they continue working, do they have to let the Medicare program know that that is their option?
Well, they would, as far as that's concerned, they don't have to sign up for Medicare per se, as long as they have proof of coverage from their existing employer and that employees are 20 or greater. So that's important because sometimes people are married and the wife or spouse is on the same group plan on the company. They may not want to get off of the plan because then the wife has to look for her own health insurance and such. So a lot of times they maybe continue working so they can elect to option out if they are working in a very sizable company.
Okay, living in Canada, I think I'm already in over my head, but let's keep going. I did do some research, and it talked about the right plan or the wrong plan. Can you go into that?
Well, I mean, every plan is different depending on your situation. There are Medicare is a plan that you can use anywhere in the U.S. You can also use it in certain select countries that are like Puerto Rico or Virgin Islands. U.S. Virgin Islands is also eligible for that. But outside of the U.S., it is not covered. So a lot of people should get a travel insurance. Like in Canada, for example, if they're moving to Canada, Medicare is not accepted in Canada. And that's something that a lot of people sometimes cross the border, they get their treatment and they come back. And that sometimes could be, a good option, or people living in Mexico. But Medicare primarily is for coverage in the U.S., and it covers both hospital and doctor with any doctor, any hospital, unlike maybe Canadian coverage, which I think you have to go to participating, or you're selected a certain region that you have to stay to or something. With Medicare, you can go pretty much anywhere, any doctor that accepts it or any hospital that accepts it, which usually most do. And that's important to note. So there is no bad plan when it comes to Medicare. It's certainly a plan that will help you save you money. On the average, a person will spend for Part A usually is a hospital. Usually there is no fee associated with that. If they worked a certain amount of years, that's usually 10 years or greater, and they will be eligible for coverage with zero premium. And the Medicare Part B, which is your doctor's, usually has a premium associated. Right now, the average is about $185 a month, which is still quite reasonable. And if they just have Medicare only, they should have a Part D plan, which is prescription plan. That's something that will cover medications and something that sometimes people don't elect to take. But if you don't take it, then you will be subject to penalties at some point down the road when you do need medications. So it's something I encourage people to take. A lot of times the plans that are really low and no premium, so it doesn't make sense not to take it, even though you're not taking medications, it is something that is required. So that's important to note.
I know when I retired, I was given various options through my pension plan to, extended medical, dental, like all that sort of stuff. And I am very healthy. And I looked and went, like, do I need this? And then I went, I'm only going to get older. Chances are at some point in time, I will need this. So I signed up for it at that point in time. And it sounds like this is a similar thing where a person may be quite healthy right now, but let's opt in and get full coverage because we don't know what's going to happen next year.
Yeah, exactly. So I always be prepared and always research your options that are available.
Now, you mentioned common mistakes that can cost a person. What are those?
Well, for example, someone that doesn't sign up during the election period that they have, that 7 month period, and they decide to not sign up. And if they are, let's say, if they're working in a place that's under 20 employees, they can be penalized. The following year, when they do sign up for Medicare. So that's something they should be aware of because you need to have also a proof of coverage in order to get Medicare coverage after that time period. So when you are eligible during that period of 7 months, you're guaranteed to be accepted by any Medicare supplement company that supplements Medicare to fill in the gaps that Medicare doesn't cover. And that's a one-time opportunity to do that. And if you don't do it during that time period, and decide later on to do it, well, then you'll be subject to medical underwriting at that point with the Medicare or a Medicare supplement company. So that's something I always encourage people to do, is to do it, because a lot of people may not be in the greatest of health, but they'll guarantee acceptance. And that's something, unlike Canada, in the US, insurance companies will exercise that right, because it's going to save them money, obviously, someone who is healthy and sick. But during that point, they have to be, by requirement by law, to take within the 7 month period guaranteed issuance for Medicare supplements.
Is there any sort of list or anything like that of like reputable companies? I'm just thinking this is where I could see like a shyster kind of company, sort of saying, "Oh yeah, we can give you these reduced rates and make it look really attractive," and then they're gone in 2 years or something.
Well, Medicare has a website, medicare.gov, where people can go ahead and research on insurance companies. Usually they're giving ratings in the companies themselves. 5-star ratings is usually the top rating for an insurance carrier. So you can review that and see how it stacks up. And again, each year the ratings change. So just keep that in mind. Sometimes it could be a 5-star this year, next year maybe 4 stars because of whatever situations, because they take into consideration customer complaints and other issues that may come into play. So obviously getting a 5-star rating is something the insurance companies strive to. So always be aware of, sometimes if it's too good to be true, check the ratings. That may be an example why it's the case.
Yeah. That's the old story, isn't it? Okay, I'm going to be honest with our listeners right now. You gave me suggestions for discussion topics. Because I know so little about the program, I'm using your talking points. Tell us about IRMA. Is that what, how you pronounce it? IRMAA?
Yeah, it is a plan that is based on an individual's income. So if an individual, and every year that changes, I believe this year it's up to $102,000 for a person's income to get coverage that is about $185 a month. But let's say if someone's income is over, let's say, $500,000 or greater, then the IRMA rate would apply. So instead of $185, they may be paying $600 a month for the Part B premium. So that's something that comes into play with a lot of high earners, for example, and they are in a situation where they're earning income beyond the average retiree. Then IRMA will be like a surcharge to your Medicare Part B premium. So that would increase. And sometimes that could be appealed if there's a situation like a trigger, like a retirement or a death in the family, that may cause a trigger of influx of money at that point, and that could be appealed, so the person doesn't have to pay more than they have to based on their income. So IRMA is something that has five or six different brackets based on their individual income. That affects the Part B premium, which is the doctor's portion of Medicare, and also for prescriptions too.
Okay, I did some research and I read that the SSA uses income tax information from 2 years ago to determine if you owe an IRMA. Now, 2 years ago, if someone's looking at retirement, a person's income may have been considerably higher higher than it is in their first year of retirement. Is there any way to balance that out so that with lower income, they don't have the higher? I
Well,
guess it would
that's
be lower then, wouldn't it? Sorry, I'm
well,
trying to
yeah. Well, that's
follow.
considered a triggering point. Retirement is a triggering point, and Medicare recognizes that as a situation that they will look at. As if they do give you a surcharge, you can appeal it, saying this was a retirement phase, and my income from now on will be X number of dollars, as opposed to we're pre-working, which was Y dollars. So that could be appealed, and most likely they will be able to receive a back to the original 185 cost for their premium. So again, it's a life-triggering situation. However, if down the road that they're earning money after retirement, again, that will come into play. So that's something to be looked at that point.
I will slip a word in for Canadians here, any Canadians that are listening. We have something called the GIS. It's a guaranteed income supplement. It's a supplement to our pensions. And same thing, the government looks at last year's income tax, where when you're working, of course, your income is usually much higher than it is in retirement. So for anybody who thinks, oh yeah, the GIS is going to put my pensions up to a livable level, that isn't going to happen in your first year, and it wouldn't happen anyways, but just given the amounts. But when they're looking at income tax from previous years, it can change the picture a little bit. And I think people need to be aware of that.
Yes,
So,
they do.
yeah. Okay, back to Medicare. Medicare and retirement planning. How does Medicare fit into the broader picture of financial security and retirement? I'm so pleased that you gave me some of these questions.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. So, when it comes to retirement planning, again, Medicare does cover the bulk of your medical expenses and such, but one should also look at getting a supplement to cover any things that are not covered under Medicare. So that usually has a premium associated with something people look when it comes to retirement that they should to take into the equation, especially if they're high earners. They need to be aware of IRMA may be triggered if they're continuing earning a higher amount of money at that point. So when coming to retirement, again, also Medicare only covers for hospital and doctors. It does cover for things like long-term care coverage, nursing homes, and such, and people under the impression that it does, and it's not the case. That could be a pretty sizable amount, especially in the U.S., where the average nursing home can anywhere from 15 to 20,000 a month on the average. So that's something should be looked at with a your financial planner to set aside funds for that purpose should that come into play. So yeah, it is important to incorporate these things. Medicare only covers both hospital and doctors medications. Also, it doesn't cover for dental, unlike in Canada, which is covered. However, if you have a Medicare Advantage plan, those plans will cover both dental and optical care. So again, depending on what plan you choose, that will depend on your income if you decide to go that route to make sure to cover for dentistry, which can be quite expensive in the U.S.
Okay, so do you have also, I would think, because we have it up here, insurance that a person can buy separate for any nursing home needs in the future?
Yes, there is insurance. Usually it's called long-term care insurance, and that is a plan that does require medical underwriting because it's not guaranteed. And usually they tend to be quite expensive depending on the age that they take it out of. So the sweet spot for cost effectiveness would be in mid-50s and maybe early 60s at that point. And again, they'd have to qualify for that. And if they do, they have to look at the type of policies that's going to cover and how long the benefit's going to cover for. So these things are should be incorporated into any type of retirement planning plan for long-term care.
Okay. You said that delays in enrolling in Medicare can result in permanent penalties. Is that got to do with that 7-month window that you mentioned?
Yeah, exactly. So if they, unless they are working in a company, that has over 20 employees or greater, if they're under that amount and have decided don't elect to get Medicare, every year that they don't, enter into Medicare will be a penalty. Usually, I believe it's 10%, and that's a lifetime penalty that doesn't go away. So that's something that, 5 years from now they don't elect to take Medicare. Well, guess what? They can pay a 50% surcharge when they do decide to get on it, and that doesn't go away. So that's a pretty substantial, penalty, and it gives you a reason not to do it. And ignorance is not bliss. I mean, if you have that opportunity, a lot of times you have spouses, who died, and the wives are left to scramble for what to do for health insurance, and they have no clue. Well, guess what? Those are usually ones that have a situation where it could be expensive for them to ignore because they're eligible and they don't elect to get the coverage. So, yeah, it is quite common in the U.S.
I'm curious, just given that one thing that you said, where a spouse could be, die, and certainly my demographic, anybody older than me, it wasn't unusual for the husband to be the key wage earner, the woman to be a homemaker, stay-at-home homemaker. If that scenario happens where he dies, and she's missed that window of opportunity, is that where Medicaid could conceivably kick in if she's lower
Well,
income?
it depends on the income. Obviously, they'd have to be pretty much on poverty level in order to qualify for Medicaid and such. So they'd have to spend down the assets in order to do that. But again, if they have a sizable income, they can still apply for Medicare. But again, they'd be subject to the penalty that'll be part of it, and that's just something that they have to address. Usually they'll work with a financial planner or insurance broker that will help to resolve that issue.
So, sorry, I had a really important question and it's gone. We'll move
Okay.
on.
Not a
Okay,
problem.
healthcare costs and retirement. You said there's strategies to manage your healthcare expenses and plan effectively for them during retirement. Is there any way, like, there's no way, I would say, to forecast what those expenses could be. So, how do you plan for them?
Well, as with anything, you should speak with someone who is like a financial planner or insurance broker to look at what your existing coverage that you have currently. If you have a long-term care insurance plan in place, if you don't, see if you may qualify. There are certain life insurance policies that also include a long-term care rider built in. So that could be another option to explore. There are a lot of avenues to look at. So every situation is different. And I work with a lot of clients addressing those type of situations. And I would say that you'd really have to really be proactive when it comes to planning for it and not being reactive. A lot of times people, don't even plan ahead. And that's really where they come into the most expenses. Sometimes things crop up unexpectedly and they don't know what to deal with. Especially in the US, the cost of going to a hospital is astronomical. And it's just really a shame because it's something that, unlike Canada, it's not universal. And medical insurance is quite expensive in retirement, and that's not something that's going to go away.
You mentioned like going into hospital, that might be a good segue. We had an incident in BC recently here where a child, she's the only person in BC with a specific disease. She was granted continuation of $1 million a year life-saving drug at the province's expense. Now, would that ever be covered, and would the family still be responsible for that 20%?
Well, again, depending on the economic situation of that individual, if they are on Medicaid, they would usually have most of those expenses covered in full. So, but in the situations where that's not the case, they will have a debt. And a lot of times they would have to pay that debt off over a period of time or declare bankruptcy, which some people do in order to, deal with that debt. And that could be a challenge, I would say. So if you have a child with that condition, depending, they may be covered under a family plan and such. That's one thing. But I would say it's pretty rare that someone doesn't have any type of coverage for that. So they'd have to look at their own policies. And if they don't qualify, they could apply for Medicaid, which could help to deal with the cost of that exposure.
Now, we do also pay for, well, some drugs. They're trying to change that around a bit too up here. But drugs, certain procedures, that sort of thing, we can claim those expenses that we are out of pocket on our income tax. Is that possible in the US or not?
Usually is they have a special account for that, but I usually work with accountants that have the know-how to deal with what could be deductible and what is not. For example, cosmetic treatment usually is not something that people look at, even though it's a medical procedure, but it's not typically something that is deductible. So again, every situation is different, but it can be expensive. Certainly, make sure you look at your policy to make sure it's the right one for you.
Right. You mentioned, or I mentioned, your expertise in AI in my intro. Now, I know you usually speak about AI in LinkedIn, but do you have any knowledge of AI in the medical system?
Well, I would say that a lot of times you can actually use AI technology to appeal a certain claim, and that comes into play. I was recently watching TV about a couple that was having issues with their insurance to pay for a procedure that was originally medically necessary, and they were getting the runaround pretty much. And they were able to use AI technology to give it the information and provide a series of letters that are persuasive enough to compel the claims department to go ahead and accept the claim and pay it off. So, in a lot of situations, AI can really help you to construct a way that is read by the claims of one that makes it look that it should be a covered benefit. You know, a lot of times a person on their own doesn't have the know-how or the technical jargon to do that, but AI technology does. And you could train it in a way that it could respond to a claim that's been denied in a way that's persuasive and could help to open the case and appeal it and be successful. So that could be a great way to use it.
Is that something that you think people could do on their own, or would you probably recommend they go to someone like you who has good in-depth knowledge about AI and how to use it and how to ask the right questions?
Well, I mean, there are programs available like ChatGPT, for example, as well as other Genesis, I believe another one is available, that offer AI technology that people could try out and see on how it goes. You know, it's really quite amazing how it could help you correspond a sentence, create an article, which I use. And it's really impressive how the technology has changed over time. I mean, it's pretty accurate. And it's always learning and always evolving. So it's something that will help people down the road, especially when it comes to claims, that they can have it resolved on their own instead of going to someone else to pay them to do the same thing that they're going to do anyway on their own by using AI technology. So there's a lot of great books on the topic. So I recommend reading up on it and take advantage. The ChatGPT usually has a free version that you can go online and look at. And I believe also through Google also has the same type of feature. So explore it and check it out and test it out. I think it's a good way to learn more about the technology.
I had done some research some time ago about the use of AI in medicine, where a person goes in and has all these tests done, and where it may take a human days possibly to go through all the different possibilities for those results and really fine-tune and hone in on exactly what they're looking for, whereas AI can do it in basically minutes. Do you see that that could possibly change the expense of procedures up the road, like for people? Because
Well, I
the
think a
time.
lot. Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the insurance companies are certainly taking advantage of it and using the technology to deny claims and such. And I think that a lot of people feel helpless, but nowadays it's kind of leveling the playing field now that a lot of AI is available to the masses. And you can use that information of your claim form and upload it to the AI technology where it can analyze it and look for ways to construct a effective claim dispute and make it more you know, accepted by the claims department. So it's really has a lot of opportunity to help people to you know, get the procedures paid for. And certainly, why not take advantage if it's available? That's a great option.
I guess I was thinking more in terms of like a doctor using it. So instead of having 8 billable hours for this one thing, this checking into stuff, they would have the results back or their decision back in about 15 minutes, whether that could bring down the.
Possibly, I would imagine a doctor certainly can use it. I mean, back in the old days, a lot of doctors would use Google to search things, and that's usually not really ideal. But it's really become impressive, and also sometimes it's also helpful for the individual if they're looking for a medication and they want to put use AI technology to see if there may be cheaper versions of it or alternatives that could be suggested. So when they go to a doctor, they have more research available to tell to discuss with the doctor and says, "Hey, well, I was researching this and I found that salt palmetto is good for erectile dysfunction. What do you think, doctor?" You know, I mean, and that's something that usually is not years ago was unheard of that you would even question the doctor's advice. And nowadays, well, doctors are inundated with questions because of AI technology available. So I think it's a good thing for people.
And I will say too that that's the one advantage that my generation has over our previous generations is that we are not afraid to confront Dr. G on and that's an initial for anybody out there called Dr. G. We can confront them and say, well, I did my research and I found this. Talk to me about that. Whereas before our generations, like our parents, it was like, Yes, Dr. G. No, Dr. G. Whatever you say, Dr. G. So it's really helpful for our generation and certainly younger people to be able to go in much more educated than their parents ever did.
Yeah,
So.
so definitely take advantage of the technology because the fact is that it's a very robust and it's really quite fascinating because it can do such extensive research beyond what Google does and look for certain case studies that are really maybe obscure, but it may be something that may save your life because of a certain study that was done and a treatment was available and you're not aware of. A lot of doctors may not be aware of this treatment, and all of a sudden the technology picks it up and says, well, this was done in Sweden and very successful rate. Well, guess what? I mean, that could be incredible for someone saving their life by accessing that technology. So yeah, it's definitely worthwhile to check it out.
And just even that whole, as you say, the ability to look almost globally for that information, doctors cannot be expected to keep everything in their brain. The medical field is just so huge now.
And also, it's important to know too, some doctors in the US, of course, are looking from a financial aspect too. You know, for example, there was this recent situation where I had, got skin cancer, and this was something that the first doctor I went to was basically describing, well, we're going to do a surgery, cut it out, and well, that's all fun and games, and that's going to leave a scar and other things. So I decided to check out AI technology and see what they say about it. And sure enough, they came up with a medication that's able to treat it without doing that and much more affordable and more effective too. And sure enough, I was able to find a doctor who specializes in that and I'm getting treatment as we speak. And I think that was because of AI technology for really not looking as a doctor as an end all, getting a second opinion, but also being informed about what options are available.
I could see that you would be a really formidable patient, for a doctor. And I don't mean that in a bad way, because you have the knowledge and the know, like just to find out all that information. So you're never going to be the one that says, oh, yes, doctor, no, doctor. So, yeah,
It
that's meant
also
as a
helps that my,
compliment.
well, it also helps my wife is a doctor, so even better.
Oh, okay. You can always, we practice with her. This might have been a bit of a segue into anything that we haven't discussed that would help, and I'm going to use your words again, women in their boomer years confidently navigate healthcare decisions and make informed choices as they create their next chapter.
Well, yeah, I mean, turn to resources like my book, Virtual Medicare, 10 Costly Mistakes You Can't Afford to Make. That'll help you give you a blueprint and what things to avoid and how to be when you're going into retirement age or turning 65 to understand your options. And a lot of people don't do that. They wait to the last minute or put things off. And, the more proactive you are, the better you'll be in a situation prepared for the unexpected. And I always tell people to take advantage of resources available, read up on material. And, ignorance is not bliss. You need to be proactive with your health. That's what I would say.
Now you zinged through that title really fast, so I'm going to repeat it. Your book is called Virtual Medicare, 10 Costly Mistakes You Can't Afford to Make. So there will be a link to that in the on your page at our website. Now you also wrote a book called Medicare Mistakes Financial Advisors Make. Can you touch on that? Like, what does a financial advisor have to do with Medicare?
A lot of times, financial advisors work with people in retirement, and a lot of times they're not really up to date on what's happening with Medicare for the most part, because it's not really a, let's say it's not really a breadwinner for them for the most part. So obviously, they make their money in other areas. And I find that a lot of times they are pretty much unaware of what mistakes that could be costly to their clients. And I work with a lot of financial planners to guide their clients through the phase that they're going through Medicare. And they're very grateful for having me as a resource because it helps them and their clients have a peace of mind. Because the worst thing a financial planner can do is try to do it on their own and make a mistake, and the client could cost them thousands of dollars. And that would be really bad for their reputation. So a lot of times they try to learn it, but it really is, you have to be full-time learning Medicare because it's always changing. So they turn to me as a resource to help guide their clients. And the book was created for that purpose, to give them a way to learn about the mistakes that the clients could be making, how to understand that ramifications could affect their reputation by not doing it. So I really just help them to understand that there are options available, and I'm not a threat to them. I'm an asset, and that's really something because they're clients of their business, and I don't get involved beyond that, whatever they bring me into. And for that, they like that up. They like that aspect of it because I don't deal financial planning. I just focus in on Medicare and specializing in that type of planning.
I think you may have touched on this at the very beginning, but I just want to clarify, if someone retires in, I don't know, Oregon, and then a couple of years they have their Medicare and everything else they need, if they then retire to Florida, is it a universal US system? Like whatever they opt for in Oregon, is it the exact same in Florida or any other state?
Well, in Oregon, I would say when it comes to if they have a Medicare supplement, I mean it's pretty much across the U.S. Pretty standardized and such, so it's not going to make a difference. But if they have a Medicare Advantage plan, Florida is way more competitive than Utah because the amount of seniors living in Florida,
Oh,
you
okay.
know, and the more the masses there are, the more insurance companies are competitive in that situation. So they can offer, for example, a lot of amazing features, including optical dental care, sometimes even cosmetic treatment. I mean, they are really, throwing out, all the bells and whistles that get people onto their plan. So every state is different, but I would say Florida is the most competitive when it comes to Advantage plans.
Some time ago, I interviewed a woman who wants everybody to retire to Nevada. So, sorry, I'm asking questions here because I really know nothing about it. So that person retires at age 65 in Oregon. By 67, they're saying, Florida's looking pretty good. They move. Can they change up their plan when they get there so they get all the other bells and whistles that are offered in Florida?
Yeah, because it's what we call a special election period, whereby if they have a change, they're moving, that's qualifies for an election period where they can decide if they want to continue with their supplement or consider a Medicare Advantage plan, which usually has a zero premium associated with it and includes dental, optical care, and a whole host of other benefits like gym membership and, sometimes meal preparation. So it's really quite extensive. So a lot of people, when they move to Florida, are shocked to know that all these benefits are available to them. And that's really can make a difference in deciding whether they want to continue with their supplement or change over. And what's also interesting is that if they do decide to change to Advantage plan and want to go back to their original plan, they can do that within a 12-month period of time. So if they just want to try out an Advantage plan just to see how it is, they can do that and go back to the original plan without having a medical underwriting. And it's only a one-time opportunity they can do that. So if they never had an Advantage plan, they can take advantage of it and try it out for the year, and they decide it's not for them, they can go back to the original supplement without having to worry about being underwritten or being denied. So that's a good thing to know.
Okay, so what do you do? And this sounds a little confrontational. I certainly don't mean it that way. You deal in AI, LinkedIn, different aspects of Medicare. Who comes to you as a client?
Well, I have a lot of clients, and I still have that are retiring. In the U.S. alone, I believe every day 10,000 people turn 65 each and every day. So there's always an abundance of people reaching out to me, and I work with them. I have a team that I work with, and we help clients in understanding their options of Medicare, looking at different supplements, and then if people who are interested in AI technology, I do talking. Speaking opportunities with associations and work with also corporations to help train their, for example, accountants and attorneys I work with to help them make their profile more optimized on LinkedIn and to help with outreach. So that's something that I do as well. So it's it's quite a array of options I offer people depending on the situation.
What got you into AI? Because it certainly seems to have secured you a niche area now.
Well, I had to appeal to a much broader audience. And Medicare, of course, is limited to the US. So the book I created was created to people around the world. So I get clients from all over the world who are reaching out to me about learning about how to optimize a LinkedIn profile, how to be more successful with outreach. So I created the book to really draw attention to some of the things that I learned that really were invaluable, and people are really enjoying reading and listening to my audio book, and also one-on-one training that I work with people to develop a strategy to be more effective and better than their competition. Because in LinkedIn, it's competition can be pretty fierce, so they need to stay one step ahead. So that's what I help them with.
So our younger listeners are going to be tuning into that book, that's for sure. Okay, now you've mentioned ChatGPT, you mentioned Genesis. Do you have key AIs, I don't know what they're called, that you prefer?
Well, those are some ones that come to mind. I have more resources in my book available. Again, as of June, when my book was released, I plan next year to release another book, an edition, an update, because everything is always changing as we speak. But I think that the idea is to just read the book, learn about the uses that it could be can afford you, and really it'll help you if you're on that platform to be better. I would say to be reached, because LinkedIn is really a almost like a search engine, and you need to have a profile that with keywords people can find you. So, for example, you're on LinkedIn yourself, I imagine, right?
Yes.
So, if you wanted to interest guests like myself, you would have in your profile optimized certain keywords that I would look for, like a podcaster, for example, or looking for guests that will help me find you. A lot of people I come across don't have that in the profile, and that's lacking. Or, for example, you perhaps want to be a guest on other programs yourself. You can also use searches on LinkedIn to find active podcasts, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, available that would take you on the program to speak about topics that are of value to you. So it's really something that is quite unique about how I address the issues in my book. And I think that the more that you learn about it, the better you'll be adept at handling acquiring clients or people signing your service and want to check you out. They'll know that you are someone of substance to deal with. You are a thought leader, and that really helps by having a profile that is optimized, so you be considered the person to go to as opposed to the competition.
Now, you've mentioned the book a few times. I take it now you're talking about the AI LinkedIn Advantage. Is that the
Yeah,
book that goes into?
yeah,
Okay.
that was just released, and that's what I've been promoting. Which is a good thing.
No, absolutely. Okay, where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
For Medicare, it's realeasymedicare.com. Just go to the website,
Oh,
realeasymedicare.com.
okay. I missed the first part. I'm thinking you got Medicare.com. Holy moly.
Yeah, but I got
Okay.
realeasymedicare.com.
Okay.
And for anything regarding LinkedIn, linkedvantage.com is the other website for learning about helping you on your LinkedIn journey, linkedvantage.com. I also have a free ebook on that website that helps you optimize your profile, so you can go ahead and check it out. And certainly, a lot of people will learn about information free of charge. So go to my website and also look for me on LinkedIn on my name, and I'll love to connect with your listeners. That would be great.
That's great. Now, I have to mention on LinkedIn, everybody knows I come with notes. And every time I wrote Al, I use a non-serif font. So it could have been mistaken for AI.
Yeah.
And on your LinkedIn profile, you actually make sure that everybody understands that your name is Al, not AI. So I had a chuckle over that. That's great.
Right.
Can I ask you a
Very
personal
good.
question before we close?
Yeah, sure.
You talk on AI. You're a published author. What are your thoughts about having AI write books?
Well, I think the problem is being authentic, and you really need to use it. It's a good tool for creating an outline for your book. It will also help you with sentence structure. But what really makes a book successful is being authentic and what you have to say about it, your experiences and such. And that's what I put in my book. It's about my experience, what I've dealt with, not some technology out there. The technology is a tool to use. It's a great resource. When you can't think of ideas, it'll give you 100 ideas what to think about for an article or for a script for a video. And that's really what you should use it for, as a tool, but it's not an end all. So really, if you want to be authentic, You have to put more information as far as what you're trying to come across, and it can help you develop a strategy on how to structure, whether it's an idea for a book or for video. And it'll help you in so many ways that when you have writer's block, you won't have that with AI technology. And that's really a unique thing about it, because you'll always have ideas that you may not even thought about available to you. So definitely check it out. It's a great tool.
I can see too where, having you actually write your own book with your own experiences is those experiences are what a lot of people will identify with. And AI doesn't have personal experiences. So,
Right.
definitely.
Yeah, then you go.
I was just going to say back in the day before AI, I know I tried a couple of PLR
Private
resources.
label. Yeah.
And looking at them, and I'd start to try to adapt them, and it's like there's not a chance. Like I finally just after trying a couple, I had to get rid of the whole thing because I need to know that they're my words out there, so I could really see the advantage of having AI give you some guidance. And but then it's up to you to, flesh out the content.
Okay, awesome. Well, this
Good,
is
good.
great. I'm glad we were able to have this little chat over here. I'm excited to conclude this, and awesome.
Yeah,
So,
great. Your website link is in the show notes. All the links will be on your page at our website. Listeners, are you an American using Medicaid? Are you not an American using a similar or different system in your country? Talk to us. Tell us about your experience. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, talk to us there. Perhaps it was a question I did not ask Al. Ask it in the comments and I'll get you an answer. And that's a distinct possibility because I was really winging it here. Share this episode. As I mentioned in my intro, any health/medical programs in one country can spur us to look into what's going on in our own country. My podcast stats prove that the majority of my listeners are American. So you especially should be spreading the word, or should I say, spreading Al's words. If you enjoyed this conversation, click the follow button. It helps us grow. I'm also registered at Substack. Following there is free, and you'll get notified every time an episode is released. Al Kushner, thank you for being my guest today, sharing so much great and important information about Medicare. And again, I appreciate you helping me with the pertinent questions.
Well, you're welcome, Agnes, and thank you again. Take care, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great rest of the week.